Today is Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week in the Christian calendar, something I know nothing about. But Jane Ellen was very kind to give me a book, and I've done more research on this homily than I've done in all the homilies I've done over the years. It's also the first full day of the Jewish holiday of Passover. Passover is the second most holy holiday in the Jewish calendar. And these two celebrations are seminal in the foundation of our Judeo-Christian culture, and always fairly close together in the spring. Both holidays depend on the lunar calendar for their dates, unlike Christmas, that is always December 25th. Easter is always the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. Now, I think that's a little mixed up this time because the full moon was last night. And so today, if you really think about it, should be Easter. But it's next week, and we're celebrating Palm Sunday today. Passover is not as set. It's always the 15th, the 22nd of the month of Nisan. But the powers that be, thank goodness, always tweak the Jewish calendar about every 7 years so that the Jewish holidays that are set by the month of the day don't move into the spring and summer and fall. It wouldn't be the same if we celebrated Passover in September, and it wouldn't be the same if we celebrated Rosh Hashanah in July. So we tweaked the Jewish calendar a little bit because the lunar months are only 28 days. Palm Sunday celebrates Jesus' triumphant entry in Jerusalem. Think of him as sort of a Taylor Swift. He was kind of well known in the region. He gave speeches, he worked miracles, and he was thought about as a special person by a lot of people who welcomed him into Jerusalem. It was a risky move. Pontius Pilate is also making an appearance in Jerusalem along the same time to tell the Jews celebrating the Passover, the feast of freedom from slavery in Egypt, and that Rome is in charge. So on their way to the city, it's told that Jesus asked one of his disciples to go get him a donkey and a colt. The colt, I found out, is the offspring of the donkey, not a horse. He wanted to make his entry in a more humble manner than the Roman. He didn't want to come in on a high horse like the Roman, sort of in a Mustang rather than a Cadillac, while Pontius Pilate came in the Cadillac. You have to remember that his friends must have been fairly well-to-do if they had a donkey and a colt to give him. So here he was riding, I don't know how he managed the two animals together, but here he was riding very humbly into Jerusalem, and those that were welcoming him threw palm leaves and coats and everything in his way to welcome him. I learned on Jeopardy that palm leaves look like a hand and were given out in ancient times to winners of sporting events like gladiators in the Colosseum and stuff like that. I understand that if you don't live in a southern clime nowadays, that you could use boxwood or some other kind of plant on Palm Sunday to celebrate the coming of Holy Week. Okay. Out of sight, Martha is preparing for the Passover Seder. I believe that Martha was the one who invited Jesus into Jerusalem because it was Passover, and she wanted him to join her family and her sisters at the Passover Seder. If she is at all like her modern counterpart, she's very busy cleaning and washing and preparing new sets of dishes and all sorts of good food and desserts to welcome Jesus and the Passover Seder. She's also preparing the matzah, which is the unleavened bread, and the Passover plate, which is always set out at the Seder as a symbol of remembrance and stuff. Anyway, I understand that in the time of Jesus, there were only three things on the Passover plate. Bitter herbs, which is horseradish, which denotes the hardship that the Jews went through in Egypt. A green vegetable such as parsley, and salt water, which the parsley is dipped in, which represents the tears of the slaves as they were facing hardship in Egypt. Today, we gather with friends and family to retell the story of the Exodus. How many of you watched TV last night and saw Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments? Oh, good. So I can tell my stories. They may be a little different than the film. The Seder plate today has expanded to six items. Each has special significance. In addition to the three matzah that's always covered with a napkin, and a piece of the matzah is always broken up and hidden around the house to keep the kids busy so that they won't destroy the Passover meal and the holiness, I guess, of the event. But that's not part of the Passover symbolic plate. So there's always bitter herbs, again, horseradish, parsley or another green representing hope and renewal to be dipped in the salt water tears, charoset, which is a sweet brown mix of chopped nuts, grated apples, cinnamon, and sweet red wine. It's really very good. And it represents the mortar and bricks used by the Hebrew slaves. And the vegetables are also dipped in the haraset during the dinner. Added later, a lamb shank, the only element of meat on the Seder plate, symbolizing the sacrifice of a lamb whose blood was painted on the doorways of slaves' homes so that the angel of death would pass over the house during the 10th and last plague that bothered Egypt. And then there's a roasted hard-boiled egg. I'm really not sure what that's for. I've never been sure what that's for, but I think it represents rebirth.
Endurance.
Rebirth and endurance. Okay. The important part of telling the story has been asking the four questions. Now, in the picture of the Last Supper, you don't see any kids. But at a modern Seder, the children are always part of it because it's an educational kind of a thing. And the children, especially the youngest, are always designated to ask the four questions. Why is this night different from all other nights? I've heard that phrase over and over again. On all other nights, we need not dip even once. On this night, we do so twice. And the answer is, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord took us out from there with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. The salt water into which we dip represents the tears we cried while in Egypt, And the chariset in which the bitter herbs are dipped reminds us of the cement we use to create the bricks. The second question. On all other nights, we eat any kind of bread. On this night, only matzah. Matzah is the bread of slaves and the poor, and reminds us that the bread did not have time to rise as the Jews hastily left Egypt. The third question. On all other nights, we eat any kind of vegetable. On this night, only marrow and bitter herbs. Marrow reminds us of the bitterness of slavery. The last question. Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights, we sit upright at table. Why on this night do we recline? And if you see pictures, even Jesus at the table was reclining, not sitting up straight. We commemorate freedom by reclining, and reclining is sort of a essence of being rich and trouble-free. Many of the questions are chanted or sung. I'm sorry, I'm not a singer. And the evening of stories goes on later with the chanting of the 10 plagues. Many, 9 of the plagues, resemble calamities known in nature. Many attested to within writings from ancient Eastern writings and books. But their patterns, their timing, and the rapid succession and announcement and removal by Moses show many that they are not a random succession of natural events. If you remember, there were, Moses made the plagues, and Pharaoh said, no big deal. My guys can do that too. So the first one was blood. He turned the water into blood. The second one, frogs. And Pharaoh's guys created frogs too. The third one, mosquitoes and lice. The fourth, swarm of insects. Pestilence, boils, hail, locusts, and then finally darkness. The 10th plague stands by itself and gives the holiday its name. The killing by the angel of death of the firstborn son, passing over those houses marked with the blood of the sacrificial lamb. Then the Jews left Egypt very quickly. Crossing the Nile, of course you've heard that the waters got very shallow so that they could pass, and then began convulsing again to prevent and drown the Egyptians chasing them. And that's the story Jesus heard at the Last Supper. I'll let Jay and Ellen finish it next week. We all know how the story ended. Yeah, but I have to tell you again how risky it was for Jesus to go into Bethlehem and take the chance of going to dinner with his friends and family. Interestingly, in Exodus, it continues that the Jews spent the next 40 years wandering around the desert, until they got to a point where they started worshiping golden idols and stuff like that, and God got very angry and had a burning bush, and Moses went up and was given the Ten Commandments. Well, we don't celebrate that at Passover. That comes this year on June 5th because they want to take the 40 days for you to start thinking about what happened. And that's a little bit like what Christians think you should do during Holy Week and Lent, leading up to Holy Week, is to think and remember and ask yourself whether you're living a pretty good life. I have to tell you that at the first Seder when I was adult. There are also four glasses of wine that you drink. So my first Seder as a person who was allowed to drink the four glasses of wine, I learned very quickly how to temper. I was three sheets to the wind. So, and that's the first and last time I would drink four glasses of wine at any one serving. Okay. So anyway, it's a very good story to tell, and I want to end up by reading the end of this really interesting book. And it's called Entering the Passion of Jesus, A Beginner's Guide to Holy Week by a Jewish, Amy Jill Levine, who is a professor of religion. And she just sums up Holy Week as follows. Entering Holy Week means risk-taking. It means facing our fears, our failures, and our faults, and addressing them. Whom have we betrayed, denied, condemned? Entering the Passion means asking questions rather than settling for what we have always been taught. Entering Holy Week means taking seriously, really seriously, what it means to be in communion, and so to participate in communion, Eucharist, fellowship, meals with others. Entering the Passion means seeing old stories in new ways, and so challenging or reinforcing or supplementing those earlier views. Entering the Passion should give us courage. Courage to lament, to embrace righteous anger, to see the course to the end. This is very much like Yom Kippur and what Jews do at the New Year to remember and reflect and to change their course. And the last, entering the Passion should give us comfort as well, comfort of knowing that death is not the end of the story, and the comfort of knowing that the good news continues, not just when people proclaim it, but when they enact it. Everyone has a place at our table. We celebrate that, and we celebrate the family we have chosen to build. At the heart of our tradition lies the universal human desire for dignity and connection. In every good story, there is history and there is risk. Okay. My printer wasn't working, so I had to bring, but it worked. I figured I'd have trouble, but I didn't. So things are going well for me. Okay. Okay. Here are the closing words that I picked, and then we will extinguish the chalice. What I enjoy about this congregation is the freedom we have to express our ideas and our beliefs openly and without censure. What I enjoy about this congregation is the demonstrable affection coupled with a strong commitment for the church in many here. The work of deepening and expanding that love and commitment never ends. It is what sustains us today and provides the foundation on which we build whatever it is that we will bequeath to the future. May we hold this community as a precious gift. May we hold our relationships as gifts that transcend borders. May we carry forth the intention of our covenant, the audacity of our covenant, the promise of our covenant, now and in the years to come. I think we're going to have another good 200 more years.